You're listening to Answers Network with Alan Cardoza, only on LA Talk Radio.
Thank you for joining us, and welcome to another edition of Answers Network. I'm your host, Alan Cardoza, and each week, this show will address many ways of creating greater health, joy, and love for you and those you really care about. And we will introduce you to top professionals and talented authors who are working to make this world a better place for all of us. Now, I'd really appreciate it if you could all do me a big favor. Please forward at least one of our shows to your social media group and to someone you know who can benefit from today's subject. This is one powerful way we can make a positive difference together. Now, before we get to our guest, please know that I am grateful to all of you who take your precious time to listen to, or in some cases, watch this show. And I'm especially grateful to those that send in questions, comments, reviews, and suggestions. Because remember, this show exists for you. Now, if you haven't gotten your copy of the Attitude of Gratitude Journal yet, please go to our website at answers.network and download a copy. Give it 21 days and comment on whatever platform you listen to us on, what focusing on gratitude has meant for you and your family. And remember, this is free. We are not charging anybody for it. We just want to get the information out there so that we can all live a life of greater gratitude. Now, before I tell you a little bit about our guest's job, it led to death threats by the Taliban, who determined that she deserved to be the victim of an honor killing. Neil Bofar Rahmani became the first female fixed-wing pilot for the Afghan Air Force in 2012. She shares incredible stories in her book, Open Skies, My Life as Afghan's First Female Pilot, where she talks about this life. Now, she speaks three languages, and she has been interviewed on the Wall Street Journal, Japan Times, The Independent, as well as having been on CNN and PBS, as well as some more local stations, because I've seen it myself. Now, in 2015, the U.S. State Department presented Ms. Rahmani with the International Woman of Courage Award. Niloufar, welcome to Answers Network.
Thank you for having me. My pleasure.
Well, it is my pleasure. We've already had some questions that have come in from people that are very interested in you and interested in your thoughts and beliefs of what's going on in Afghanistan. But before we go into that, what were your goals and aspirations as a child? And was flying airplanes even on your radar as a child?
Well, as a child, the childhood that I had, of course, you know, flying an airplane, being a pilot, it definitely wasn't in my radar. You know, because as a woman and an Afghan little girl growing up in a very harsh condition, that I would never wish that for any child in the world. I was always told, what am I supposed to do? They took away the right of education from me just because I was a woman. I wasn't allowed to even go to school and be educated to read and write. Of course, for growing up like that in a country that you've always been told and been ashamed of being a woman, you know, you never think about being a pilot or flying an airplane. Of course, growing up, hearing stories and, you know, seeing how the woman got treated in Afghanistan. And because of all the violence that me and my family have faced during the civil war in Afghanistan and growing up with not even having, you know, water or a roof on our head, all that stuff, really, like I was a child that I was really upset to be even living in this earth or in the ground with all these people. I guess just looking at, you know, sitting outside the refugee camp tent, I would just look at the sky and enjoy seeing the birds even flying by. And I would just wish, you know, as a human, just wish that what if I was just like that bird? What if I could just fly away and just get away with all this violence and all this people from this place? So, you know, growing up definitely sparked in my heart that I wanted to do something and fly, but not as a being a child, just I guess wish
Right.
to be an adult. That's
Well, what changed that allowed you to be able to get an education so that you could eventually join the Afghani military?
Well, as we all know, and the world knows, after 9/11 attack in Afghanistan, the U.S. invading Afghanistan and president of the U.S. in Afghanistan brought so many changes, especially for the girls and the future of the children in Afghanistan. After they came to Afghanistan, after 2001, the girls' schools started opening up for all the girls in the country. And I was one of those girls that I was given that opportunity to go to school and was so excited about that education. Nobody was telling me there is no school for girls anymore. The schools reopened and the women got to get into society more and more. They became part of the Congress. It took a little while, but it all happened during this last 20 years. And I was lucky that I was given that opportunity to at least have the right of education.
And, I wish that all young people across the world, and especially in the more westernized countries, could hear your story about the fact of looking at education as a blessing, looking at something that you are so looking forward to. Unfortunately, here in the United States, there are many kids that think that education is somehow a chore, or something that it's forced upon them that they don't want. And yet it is, to me, truly the most important thing that we can do for any of our young people is to give them the education that allows them to go on and live the life that they choose. So to me, your story is so incredible. And I wish that it could be spoken in every school. So, I mean, who or what inspired you to then join the Afghani military? When you joined the military, were you still looking to the sky and thinking, if I join the military, maybe I'll get up there?
As I mentioned, for me, as lots of people that in any part of the world, you ask them, it was their passion. They just always knew they wanted to be a pilot and they always had a dream for it. As I mentioned, for me growing up, that as a girl that I didn't even knew I would be educated. I didn't even knew that I would be able to write or read. And, I never even knew that. Growing up, hearing stories from my father that he grew up during the Soviet in Afghanistan. And unfortunately, over years and years, Afghanistan is a very tribal country. And unfortunately, because he wasn't part of that specific tribe, or if we didn't have any part, connection in government, didn't matter how smart he was, didn't matter how, very intelligent he is. It just never given him the chance to be even part of the pilot training or go to the Air Force, because it was just all by connection. And, growing up, he told me always about that story, how he could never, ever, complete his dream. And of course, in Afghanistan, if you have a son, they always believe that a son will always make your dream come true. Nobody even have a faith on a girl that they would be strong enough to do anything, because we are all created the same way. God gave us, the same brain, the same hand, the same two legs. And why? It's just because they see a woman as a weak, as a, they are weak. They cannot do anything. And plus seeing, how the woman get treated during the Taliban regime in Afghanistan and other people choosing for them what they have to do, what is their right. It have always hurted me inside, even if I never, showing it, but it always hurted me that when I saw advertising in the television that US wanted for Afghanistan, that women should be part of any part of government and they can join the Air Force, Army, even they can be a pilot. And I guess that was my moment. I heard that news on the television and I couldn't stop my joys. And I always knew it. I wanted to make my dad's dream come true. I wanted to do something for the girls in Afghanistan. I wanted to be a voice for them. I wanted them to see me in the uniform and say, this is not 20 years ago, or this is not Taliban regime. There is a woman in uniform. If she can do it, I can do it the same. And that's exactly when I have started to be a voice and be example for other girls, that they have to raise their voice and do anything they want. Why do other people have to chosen for them? And this is not right.
Well, we've gotten some questions that have come in regards to your feelings on what's happening now. But before we get to that part of it, what was it like being a woman in the military in your country at that time? And what were some of the internal and external factors that led you to make this kind of bold and very risk-ridden goal in the Afghani culture?
It definitely wasn't easy, you know, especially every woman in any part of the world experience this if they are part of, you know, just a minority in that society. And for me, it was the same thing. I was never welcomed. You know, even the time that I joined, graduated, I had a rank on my shoulders, the same as my men colleague. They never viewed me the same. I have always hear how they could break my confidence, how they could tell me I will fail, how they all waited for me to fail. By the time, you know, I would always hear that how it's shameful for a woman to wear the uniform, be here. Like, you're not from a good family. You don't have a parents to support you. That's why you joined the military. And it's like the words and how they try to destroy a person's confidence. It always been on my path, always. And, you know, when I chosen that I want to be in the military, I want to wear the uniform, I had to overcome all those fear, all those words, and ignore it. And the only way I could prove in myself as a woman, just by my actions, to do better than them and be best in my job and not let them, you know, prove them right. So, and that's what I have done and kept going. And of course, there has been so many challenges that they just didn't want me to be there.
And, now, you mentioned your rank. Am I correct in what I read that you elevated to the rank of captain?
Correct.
See, I love that. That obviously meant that you were of a much higher rank than probably a lot of the other people on whatever base or location you were at. How difficult was that to get the men to do what it is they were supposed to do and taking orders from a woman captain?
Absolutely painful for them, because I remember the days that none of them would salute me, and I'm okay with that. It shows how, you know, they respect the military laws and rules. It showed them bad, not me. Mm-hmm. And I was okay with that. If they feel ashamed to salute a woman because they're higher ranking than them, then this is their problem. And I had people that they didn't want to fly with me because they were so afraid that she's so young and how come she's in charge. And we do not want to get on board the same airplane that she is the commander of that flight. And, it, you know, of course, for every human, it breaks your heart that you've been shamed like that, even though you've proven yourself that you can do it. You've been in this mission. You have done this mission so many times. But it's always those words that I have heard. But as I mentioned, you know, I have always stood up and fought against it. And the only way it changed them, some of them, even though the people that, you know, the generals and the colonels that we had to transfer them from one state city to another city, after the end of the flight and the mission, they would tell me how wrong they were. And they are so proud of me and they have judged me wrong. And it always amazed me how the older generation in Afghanistan, they would understand, they would change so easy than the younger generation, which is sometimes hard to explain this to the other societies or other countries, because the older generation in Afghanistan, they lived on 60s and the centuries that women had completely right, like every other country in the world. They are okay with that. They have seen women to be part of the society. They have seen women in the military. They have seen women in the colleges. But unfortunately, the younger generations are the one, they grew up during the Taliban regime, that they have always been told how bad you're were allowed to treat your wife, your sister, your mother, and it's hard to change those generation. And that's what I was dealing with. I was dealing with a generation that it was almost impossible to change, and so, which is very unfortunate.
Yeah, and I think that's a great point. Is that you know, it shows the changes that have happened, and unfortunately, how you can have entire generations of people that don't know the freedoms that a lot of us have taken for granted. There's a one of the questions and comments that have come in, and again, I want to thank those people that take the time to send these in. It's much appreciated. This one says, my father, and then in parentheses, who died of cancer when I was a teenager, was a pilot in the Air Force. It was always my dream to follow in his footsteps. But as a young woman living in the South in the 70s, I was told it was not an appropriate life for a young woman. It wasn't until I was in my 40s that I finally found the courage to get my pilot's license. And that was 28 years ago. And I now own a plane and a glider. There is absolutely no other feeling that matches being in the air. Can you share why flying was the path you choose? And please know that I am so excited to read your book as the first woman and a pilot second. And that's from Wanda in New York.
Thank you so much. And it means the world to me that how amazing there is amazing women in the world. And you know, just to see them, how everyone believe that what their passion is, they have to go get it no matter at what age. And, you know, flying for me, it's not because I always had a passion for it, that I knew what I want to do. It's because of the difficulties, because of the problems, because of the dreams that has been always, you know, of me to be educated a woman. It always just combined together and made me to make this decision, because our countries, they believe a woman can be a nurse, a doctor, and a teacher. Nothing else is acceptable in our society. I can just say it's more cultural than the religion. It has nothing to do with the religion. But unfortunately, flying, as I mentioned, you know, when you are a little girl, you remember the joy moment in your life. I guess it lasts with you forever. And as I mentioned, for me, growing up in so much violence, and you know, everybody told me how shameful it is to be a woman. And you know, I always thought how fortunate those creature of gods, like a birds, are, that they just can get away with all of this just by flying by. And at the time, for me, you know, the joy of flying is because once I'm in the air and not in the ground, I leave all the stress and the problems and whatever, you know, difficulties and struggles that I had entire my life behind, because all I have to think is about my airplane, what I need to do, and how enjoyable everything is up there. Because that's the only moment for me that I don't think about my past, you know, the troubles, the struggles that I have faced in life. It all goes away. It's kind of like a magic that I don't even think about them anymore.
Mm-hmm. You know, one of the thoughts, and I think that a lot of people in the United States would not understand, because I've heard people tell me when I talk about, and I'm someone who's traveled to many countries, and I will talk about some of the difficulties that people are having there, or that women are having there, from a lack of rights situation. And I'll have people say, well, why don't they just leave? You know, and so I'd like you to address two things. One is, why is it not, I mean, explain why it isn't that simple that you can just leave. And then the second part is, talk a little bit about what the ramifications of leaving, or even of your story, is on your family.
You know, as we always mention, failure is not an option. The same way, if you are a woman in a society, or even a man in a society, that you always telling you what is your right and we're going to give it to you or not, like the situation right now in Afghanistan, that it's in the hand of men and the extremist group in Afghanistan, that they tell the woman, if we don't give you their right, your right, that's it. You're not going to ever have it. So sometimes, you know, even for me, being a woman and what I have faced in the Air Force, even just to be part of, you know, a service member in my country and serve my country and be an example for other women to come behind me. You know, how I always got treated bad just because I was a woman. If I left, if I, you know, just leave the Air Force, I would give them the chance to talk that she couldn't handle it. That's all the people can just talk, because word doesn't cost anything. Everybody can say something. Nobody talks about the reality, why and why. Mm-hmm. All they can just say is, because she was a woman, she just couldn't handle it. That's why she left. So for so many women, not only in Afghanistan, for most part of the, you know, countries in the world, just leaving is not an option. You have to prove them wrong. You have to stay and fight for it. And what I have ever tried to do, and that's why I stood and did anything I could to just change them. But sometimes it's impossible. Sometimes you have to choose about if you and your family life is so much important or not. And I have done, because when a person wear the uniform and they want to serve their countries, or if they want to be any and do anything in mm-hmm. their countries, it always, you know, they want to do it. That's why they are there, and they take the risk. And that's what I have done. But unfortunately, because of my choices, because of what I have done, and I wanted to change the society and the mentality and the culture, it not only brought so much risk and difficulties and threats in my life, it even put my family, entire my family, in danger by the extremist group and by the Taliban, by even my own extended family and the society, because they all believed I went against religion because I wear the uniform and I serve my country. Is it something that it's against the religion? No, that's absolutely wrong. It's just the culture and the men mentality. And unfortunately, it put entire my family in danger at the point that they all believed any member of my family, if they get honor killed, it's very pride for the person did that.
Do you still fear for some of your family that's still there?
Absolutely, because at the point I thought, if I stop what I'm doing, the threats and everything that we are facing, it's all going to stop. But unfortunately, that never been the deal. Never. Because what they believe is something that I have done, it's already done, and I already brought a shame. And doesn't matter if it is 10 years past, if it is 5 years past, if they still destroy that shame, they are still, you know, be respected by the society, and it's a pride. And that's what my family and myself had to go through for over years. And it's so heartbreaking that what is wrong with such kind of people? Why they don't like a peaceful life? And why they try even to destroy someone's life because they just want to be voice and have a voice and ask for their right? And it never made sense to me. Like, how these people even exist in this world?
Wow. So we have another question. This one reads, I was so inspired by your story. My grandparents are originally from Afghanistan, and they have told me so many stories about their life there. They taught my sister and I great appreciation of our history and our culture, while also encouraging us to pursue our dreams in life. Now, for my question, although most of our close family no longer live in Afghanistan, we are gravely concerned about our fellow Afghans. How do you think the current situation will turn out, and how will it affect our loved ones who remain there? And this is from Benish in Pennsylvania.
Thank you for your question. You know, as I can tell, as an Afghan woman, and my heart, my soul is in pain since the day I found out the Afghanistan that nobody believed it's going to go down like this, and it destroyed all of a sudden in a blink of eyes, especially not only me being concerned about the future of those children in Afghanistan, the women in Afghanistan, every Afghans, and even though so many Americans I have seen, it brought so much pain in their heart and their body. It's so hard to not even think. You know, I'm a person that I always like to be positive and think positive, but it's unfortunate that I'm at the point that I cannot even be positive and hope, because I really hope that the Taliban and extremist group will prove me wrong, that I am wrong, they changed. But not even one person in my heart tells me that the Taliban changed. They even got it worse. They're going to destroy any symbol of freedom and a voice of a woman in Afghanistan just because the US brought it. They don't believe on that. And as we all know, there is no place for a woman or the educated person in the government of the Taliban. And it's so concerning that my heart goes for all those Afghan families that entire this 20 years of that they thought the war is over. They're gonna have a peaceful life. They build their life. There are so many women in Afghanistan that they are the only persons in the family to earn money and support their family. They don't have a father, they don't have a brother or a man to go out and earn money and to survive. What are they gonna do? Because nobody even let them to be part of the society. They raise their voice, they get beat up, they get punished, they completely shut down any kind of technology on them just because they should not show it to the world. This is the Taliban. And it just breaks my heart to even think about how their future is going to be. I am deeply concerned about their future because I don't know how the world let Afghanistan to go to the hand of Pakistan, to the hand of China, and to the hand of Taliban. Because Afghanistan one day is going to turn out to a huge extremist group that it's not only going to hurt Afghanistan, it's going to hurt the entire world. And I'm afraid of the day that there will be the innocent people, the children of Afghanistan, is going to be the victim of this. And it's
Yeah, I mean, so for everybody out there listening, I mean, we are talking with Niloufar Rahmani, and her book is called Open Skies: My Life as Afghanistan's First Female Pilot. As you can hear, we're talking about what's going on there right now. We're going to touch on that a little bit more when we come back. So stay with us. You're listening to Answers Network.
Founded over 30 years ago to meet the needs of families in crisis, WestShield has continually focused on resolving issues that negatively impact families and businesses. Our signature therapeutic transportation service helps to ensure that adolescents in crisis are safely transported to specialized schools, programs, and treatment centers with unsurpassed experience and success. We are supported by our full-service licensed investigation agency that has legally, professionally, and compassionately located hundreds of runaways and teens. We are experienced and qualified to help, offering solutions which may include referrals to our international network of top professionals in the fields of educational consulting, psychology, psychiatry, and investigations. Simply put, WestShield Adolescent Services and WestShield Investigations are the best solutions when your family is facing a personal crisis. Call 1-800-899-8585, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. That's 1-800-899-8585, or visit our website at westshield.com. Thank you.
And we're back. We are talking with Niloufar Rahmani, and we're talking about Afghanistan, but we're also talking about her book, Open Skies: My Life as Afghanistan's First Female Pilot. Share with us a little bit about what you're doing here in the US and, you know, and a little bit about the book and some of the things that maybe we can kind of go on a little more positive note, and we'll come back to talking about what's going on over there a little later.
Thank you. Well, for sure, since I moved to the United States, and it always hurted me deeply inside that how easily it was, you know, for me to choose between live or career, and the same thing for the good of my family. But I was so fortunate that when I moved to the United States, I was given the opportunity to fly again and pursue my dream, and you know, at least have something that I always fought for. And now I am on a path of being a flight instructor and pass the knowledge for those men and women. They always have a passion for flying and just to make their dream come true. And if I can pass that knowledge for them, it means everything to me. And especially for in the country that, like Afghanistan, that I always been, they kept me silent and they clipped my wings. I did what I have done. And especially in the US, it's the land of freedom. You have a voice, you can do anything you want. I will not stop. I would be still a voice for Afghan women and the future of the children in Afghanistan. And I hope one day I will be in a uniform again and serve my country, even though not as an Afghan Air Force pilot, as a U.S. Afghan. So I would be able to help and support my country that way. And I would never stop. Hopefully, my plan and my goal is hopefully I will be one day part of the Congress, that at least I can be a voice that way, even if it is a voice for America, for the future of Afghanistan as a woman. I will always fight for it, and I will never stop.
Well, first of all, I love that. And what I love, and when you said, you know, you look to at some point in time run for Congress to get involved, I love people that have come to this country. They value the freedoms that we have, and they want to talk about it in a very positive way. That to me is what this is all about. That is beautiful. So what do you think that we can do? In other words, those of us that are here, you know a lot about what's going on over there. What can we do? And because you mentioned Congress, one of the thoughts is that is what we can do to start paying closer attention to who is voted into office and the decisions that they're going to make in regards to human rights and equality?
Well, thank you for your question. You know, I believe that humanity, it costs nothing, but it means everything to the world, and especially nowadays in Afghanistan, for all those kids and the women in Afghanistan. You know, as an American, I have seen there has been so many kind souls and hearts that they have cried at the same time with me to share the pain with me, how they are in pain with what is going on in Afghanistan. And sometimes this is some decisions that it's not in the hand of people to control. And I have seen that kindness. And I believe that if every American be a voice for Afghan people, it means a lot. It's going to change a lot. It's going to change huge, huge mind of the people, like everywhere, not only in the United States, in the UN. If everybody raise their voice and say, we are going to be with Afghan people, we are not going to let this extremist group in Afghanistan to win. We are not going to let Pakistan to bring extremist group in Afghanistan. We're not going to let another disaster to happen to the world. It's going to make a big difference. Sometimes the voices can make a big difference. And I do hope and request that from every person that they believe on what I have said, to be a voice for Afghan people, to not let those innocent people to be tortured by extremist group like Taliban, and bring the country or make Afghanistan a huge terrorist country that it's gonna hurt the world one day. If we are not gonna stop this now, it's gonna hurt us one day. Not only hurt Afghanistan, it's gonna hurt the world. And I kindly ask everyone to raise their voice to not let the world accept Taliban as a new government of Afghanistan, and to not believe what they promised, because everything they have promised, none of them was right. They have promised so many things that they're going to change and lead a woman to do, but they were absolutely wrong. I have just watched a video this morning, and it brought tears in my eyes, that in Herat province in Afghanistan, the Taliban are beating an Afghan woman, and she's screaming and asking for help. Why nobody sees that? How, which kind of people they are, and how the world believe them that they changed. They have not changed. they even got worse. And so this is my fear for the future and for the future of the world, not only Afghanistan.
Now, we have other politicians or other young people that have gotten into politics that have come from other countries. What is your thoughts on, because we have some that seem to value the freedoms that we have here, and yet we have others that have seemed to come in, and I don't understand the concept of leaving a country because you don't like what they're doing, and then coming to this country and trying to make us change to be like that. But I'm thinking, but that's what you left. Why do you want us to change to that? I love the fact that when you're talking about this, you're talking about enjoying the freedoms that are provided by this country. But what's your thoughts or reasoning that you can think of in regards to some that seem to come here but somehow want us to become something that they ran away from?
That's a great point. That's absolutely a great point, because as an immigrant, all of us left our country, our life, and our future just because what we didn't like, because somebody tried to kill us, torture us, just for what we have done, and we try to run away from that. It's so painful to bring that in a country that gives you freedom, gives you a voice, gives you a right to do anything you want to do that you haven't been given in your own homeland. And I don't absolutely believe on that. We have to be, we have to learn a lesson from that, because it's something that we all have to learn, that if it was so great, why we have to still follow that and bring it in a society that offer so many great things to us. We have to be a better voice for those people that they left behind, and they are going through this, not to try to bring that culture, that society in a country that they try to give the best for you. And I absolutely disagree with that we shouldn't do that. We should be even a better version of ourselves to not let that happen, especially in a country that gave us the freedom of speech, the freedom of what we can do. And I would not absolutely agree with that.
Now, I mentioned earlier how I would love to see your message in all of the schools. In fact, I think, you know, maybe around like middle school or something like that for young people when they're just starting to sort of get a little bit more of a worldview to get your message. In fact, I would love to see, you know, more travel by young people and stuff to see what the rest of the world is, because I think you would then feel a lot more appreciative of the things that they have. If I could set it up right now and you were going to speak to a group of international students, and let's say that they're between about 10 and 13, if you were going to speak to them and half of them are females, what message would you want to deliver to them?
My biggest message for them will be that they should never, ever take granted for what they have, especially if they think the education is something that it's given to them. No matter what, they have to do it because it's given to them and they have to do it. No, you have been so blessed and fortunate that you've been born in a country that you have given everything. Sometimes that I have always mentioned that we never think as a human, because when our life gets so easy, when our life gets so comfortable, we forget about the simplest thing in life that we've been fortunate to have, mm-hmm. like have a roof on our head. As an Afghan little child, I never wish my childhood to any child in the world. I always wish to have a roof on my head. I grew up in a tent that it was miserable, especially in the summer. We didn't have electricity. We didn't have even a notebook to write on. And these are something that I always mention.
I want you to touch a little bit more on that, because I think that there are young people here that may not catch that if they're listening to this in the future, and grew up in a tent. Okay, some of them here might think, oh, like camping. Okay. So explain that this is not like camping. And when you say that it got hot, explain what the temperature is there. Because again, I think there's people here that I've been there. So I know what the temperatures get there. So explain what living in a tent really means and what temperatures you are having to deal with and how far you have to walk just to get water.
Yeah, this is not absolutely like a camping tent. Absolutely not. It's so far from that. You know, I was 6 months old when my parents became immigrant to Pakistan. And behind, you know, after they crossed the borders, there was a refugee camp that we had to stay there because we had no other place. The temperature in the summer in those desert area gets like 100 something, like with no EC, with... You see like the bugs, and sometimes in those areas you're afraid of snakes, and to sleep, you couldn't even sleep. And for, you know, most of the time, because my parents had to put like their shoes under their head because they didn't have enough pillows, they would put the clothes under the child's head just because to sleep, to have at least fall asleep. And that's what we had to go through with that temperature, hot and bugs, and you have to walk for miles and stand in the lines for hours to just get a little bit of food. And maybe if it is just a bread or if it is a little bit of beans, not something that fill you up, something that you could just stay alive. Or for water, the water wasn't even a clean water. It wasn't like a bottle water. It was the water that we never even knew if that was even clean, because the water wasn't even look clean like a water. It was like more like a yellowish. I remember mm-hmm. that my father would leave it and to let that dirty stuff in the water to sink, and then he will give it to us to drink, because it's absolutely, you know, something that, as I mentioned, I would never wish that for any child in the world. And that's what I always wished for, to just have a roof on my head, to not in the wind and the heat on the winter, at least step out of the door in a real door, real windows, and a real roof in our head. And that's always been just a simple thing for other world that doesn't even think about it. It was a dream for me as a child to have one day. And it's, I guess when you never live that life, it's hard to understand. And I don't blame those young kids in other countries or the world to understand what I have been through. All I'm saying is that they should be so thankful. They are so blessed that the simplest things in other part of the world that people struggle for, they just want to be alive in this country. They have more than what they need to have, and they still complain about what they don't have. They take things for granted, and it definitely hurts me to see that. And we should be better than that. We should be so thankful. And I, as I mentioned, my message will be that even if they cannot travel, they can read books, they can Google, they can see how the lives are for other children and kids in the world, and how fortunate they are in the U.S. to be so blessed with so many things that they don't even think about it.
Now, I was thinking about the question I asked you in regards to, you know, the people that have come over here that then become politicians, but yet, you know, are not valuing what it is that's here and somehow trying to change things to go back to the way that it was. I asked somebody else that question some years ago. I believe it was on this show, and they had a very interesting yet disturbing answer. Their answer was that they believe that those politicians that are doing that, or that have become politicians that are doing that, they believe that they were raised in an environment to where there was only two kinds of people, that they were either the exploiter or the exploitee, and that they feel that they, by getting into that position, become the exploiter, that they can only be one or the other, that they don't understand that you can actually serve the people and be grateful for the freedoms and enjoy it and welcome it. And I thought that was a very unusual answer, because being raised in this country, that doesn't make sense to me. Does that make any sense to you, their answer?
Well, you will be surprised how in one world, how everybody in a country, how everybody has a different opinion about things. Even though if you are from a same member of family, everybody has a different opinions. And you cannot change that, because that's what they believe. Sometimes it's so hard to change what a human think. And it takes years and years, or maybe a bad experience happened to them, they might change. And as I mentioned, I do not believe on that. How can you go against or bring the culture that always hurted you and yourself and your family? How can you bring that in a society that offers you everything? In a society that maybe, for example, my people, the government, they clipped my wings. They didn't let me fly. They wanted to kill me just because I had a passion and I wanted to do something for my country and fly. But this opportunity was given to me in this country. How can I go against it? How can I hurt that? And it absolutely doesn't make sense to me that for something that you have been hurt, how would you believe to even bring that in a society that offer help to you, making you better, giving you the voice, to be the voice for the people, and you try to change it? It's just hard for me to understand what is really going on in every human's mind. And it's something that it's hard for everyone to realize. And I guess
Change. You and me both, because again, I don't understand it either. But I just thought that maybe there was that somehow that thought process that it might, not that you would agree with it, but that maybe had a different perception of it than I had at the time in which I got that answer. For everybody out there, we are speaking with Niloufar Rahmani, and her book is Open Skies, My Life as Afghan's First Female Pilot. We're just about out of time. How can somebody get in touch with you? And especially if there's, you know, young people, young woman or whatever that wants to get in touch with you, what is the best way they can do that?
Thank you. Thank you for mentioning that. I try my best to stay away from social media because there's so many fake accounts on my name and I don't trust it. But I do have a website. It's called niloufarrahmani.com. or openskiesbook.com. Either one will guide them to my website. And I do have contact information there, and they can directly reach out to me.
That is wonderful. And for anybody out there, if you're driving and you weren't able to write that down, we will have that so that you'll have the correct spelling and stuff to be able to pull that up. So thank you so much for coming on, and thank you for being the strong woman that you are and making a difference.
Thank you for having me. It was my pleasure. Thank you.
All right. Now, for everybody out there, go to the website, gather some information. I think that we will all be better for it. Now, in regards to next week, be with us next Monday, because we're going to be joined by J.B. McKinnon, and it will be to discuss his new book, The Day the World Stops Shopping. And in this interview, JB will discuss the consumer dilemma and why we can't stop shopping, and yet why we must. So please visit our archives of past interviews at answers.network, or you can subscribe to our show through whatever podcast platform that you listen to us from. Please leave a review. Let us know what you think. Send us your questions, your comments. It is what allows us to become the best we can be. And the next time that you're on Facebook or Twitter, please remember, stop by our page, check out some of our latest posts. If you like them, please like us and spread the word. For everybody out there, be good human beings and be with us again next week on Answers Network.
Hello, I'm Marty Cove. You might remember me from roles such as Sensei in the Karate Kid films. I've done over 100 films and countless stunts in my career, and I've always given 100%. With the damage done to my body over time, I needed to find relief from my chronic pain. My passion for health and fitness drove me to find a natural way to combat muscle pain. Teaming up with doctors, detectives, and a compounding pharmacist, we've created Marty's Cobra Cove Ultra Strength CBD Cream. It's the only thing that has been strong enough to knock out my pain. And fast. Honestly, you may have tried the rest, but it's time to try the best. It's legal, it's safe, and 100% effective. Show your pain. No mercy. Go to www.martyscobracove.com.
You're listening to Answers Network with Alan Cardoza, only on LA Talk Radio.